You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in our very own Brevard County, Florida, in Cocoa, Florida. We're going to have a fantastic show today. We're on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online
all over the World Wide Web on 1510wwbc.com. If you're listening live, you can go to the web app there and just hit the listen live button and you can get us on any one of your streaming devices. Or if you'd like to catch the show as an archive after the show, we put it on our website, which is cetamediainc.com, and also all over our Facebook pages and then shared to every piece of social media we can possibly.
I know. And it's amazing, isn't
14
it?
Years, two guests.
It's like part
year,
of our
a
life.
Week. It has been part of our
it's
life.
It's like we wake up and it's Monday morning.
That's right.
You get your routine.
And yeah. I got to say, we usually never bring up shows from last week, but I'm so excited about the aquarium coming to Brevard Zoo.
Me too.
I really, really am. Yeah. And for you, Danny, as a fisherman, I would imagine that you would love to see all those cool little species of new fish.
One more tourist attraction.
I know.
One more. You know,
and we have another one coming too, is Lagoon, which is going to be a water park somewhere on the airport property.
And I saw something about a pirate ship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a pirate ship that's down by Waterway Estates that does like little tours.
Well, so
we love our town. We love Brevard County. We love being here, and certainly being on community radio here on 1510 WWBC.
Well, I tell you, Ellen, when I think about how much time we have spent on our show here, I always say, gosh. We do make a difference because people would meet me all the time and say, hey, I heard you and Ellen on the radio, and I couldn't use the service of XYZ right away, but I put the number away. And there was one such thing was a nursing agency. And so the lady ended up using one of the agencies that came on. But for our listeners who are tuning in today, we have an action-packed show. As usual, on Mondays, we sit here and we like to blah, blah, blah about everything under the sun. We talk about whatever people want to talk about, whatever they sponsor a segment for. And kudos to all our sponsors for keeping us on air. Right, Ellen?
Yes, we have quite a few loyal sponsors that have been with us and loyal friends that appear on the show at least once or twice a year. And I did want to mention, too, I gave a great speech or an event, I should say, at United Way. And I got to see like 40 of our friends because it seemed like the entire room
had come on Viewpoint
with Sita and Friends. So it was really cool to see everyone and realize, just like you said, what an impact the show makes on the community.
Yeah, we community radio is important because we get to share the successes of each other right here in our community, our business community, political community, whatever it is. And so for the folks who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Ellen and I sit here on Mondays. Our board is run by Danny, the fisherman Danny. And we talk to people that want to advertise their book, their service, their product. Maybe they're running for office. We've become like author central here. Every author would like to call in and speak about their book. And everybody's got a story to tell. And today's no different. We have a guest in studio with us. Christine Sailing is here. I'm so glad you're here. Because I've known you from way back then. I took care of Christine's mother a few years ago. And she's a friend of Ellen O'Neill, who is my co-host, my right hand. Our friend Allie is not here today. Maybe she'll come back in a few months. She's taking a little rest.
Break. Yep.
A little rest. So today, Ellen, our show today, we've got two people calling in. And I should have asked the other Ellen how to say her last name, but I will. Her name is Ellen Jo, L-J-U-N-G.
Young.
Young. That's it. Ellen Jo Young.
That's what I'm going with. But she's on the phone, so we'll ask her.
So we'll ask her in a minute. So she's calling in to speak about her books, her life after teaching. She's still giving back so much. She is part of the change she wants to see. And about bureaucracy and expectations. She's got great leadership skills, and we can learn a lot from Ellen Young. Our second segment is with a gentleman that I booked. My God, I must have booked him about 6 months ago. His name is Mr. Matt McCain, and he will be calling in to chat about Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care policies. Should you give your stuff to your kids or not? You know how to qualify for stuff. So we're going to have a great segment with him in a little bit. But first, Ellen is on the phone. And Ellen, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you for having me. And you did get my name right. It's Swedish, and the L is silent, the J is a Y.
See, the other Ellen knows. My name's Ellen O'Neill, so the other Ellen knows how to pronounce everything.
So I'm impressed.
Yeah, I know. She does. You know, usually before the show, I would ask her, you know, I would say, Ellen, let's get these names straight, but I forgot. So, you know, I read your bio, and my goodness, talk about a person who is educated, not just as a teacher, but you're like a woman of the world. You've done almost everything, and you're giving back. So talk to us a little bit about your teaching career, your writing after that, and let's just let our viewers, our listeners, like you're viewing. Yeah, our listeners know a little bit about you.
Sure. I was a public school teacher for 30 years. I taught teachers as well. I worked for the state of Illinois after I retired on a very exciting project, taking one of the things I did in my school to schools all over the state. Then I wrote professional development materials for a company for teacher training, and I have published 2 textbooks and a couple of dozen articles. The textbooks for how to teach writing with computers when they were new, believe it or not, in the late 80s, 90s. And I just published my teaching memoir a year ago, What I Learned from Students and Colleagues and Parents. I loved teaching, and I still miss the classroom today, but I'm very concerned about the future of public education and the forces that are not being addressed effectively.
Yes, and we do have a teacher amongst us today. Our friend is a teacher as well, so she'll feel free to jump in whenever she can. So your book is entitled Tales Out of School. Mm-hmm. And you talk about all the lessons learned as a teacher, but it seems to me, as in addition to academics, you spent a lot of time getting to know the students and their background, and your heart was in the right place for so many students. You wanted to make sure that every child did have a quality education. So talk to us a little bit about some of the stuff you learned from these students that you put into this book.
Oh, I learned that it's way too easy to hide for kids who need to be drawn out, that every kid needs to be believed in order to succeed, that everybody has something of value to offer, and that kids really, when they have a chance to learn something and succeed, and I also did this service learning program with students, it's transformational to have those kinds of positive experiences, especially for my kids who didn't always have positive experiences in school. And I feel very fortunate. I absolutely believe the best teachers get to know their students, because students don't come to us in a vacuum, and if they're coming from an unhappy home or an unsafe physical environment, or they're hungry, or they're depressed, or there's something going on in their lives that impacts their ability to learn, if a teacher doesn't know, he or she can't be as helpful.
Right. And you know, you're right. Like nowadays, we were just speaking with each other before we went on air about the situation with a public education. It used to be we all grew up knowing that every child deserves a quality public education. And oftentimes, we feel as though now that's been taken away from so many. You kind of sort of looked into the future when you were teaching, because a lot of the material you taught and a lot of the clubs you founded, you actually could see this, like you could see into the future. You must have had a crystal ball. So talk to us about some of the clubs you founded for children to feel safe, for students to feel safe.
Well, I'll start with a lesser one, but that I thought was really important. As technology came into my school system, so many of my teachers struggled. And part of my job, 40% of my job, I had fewer classes so I could work with teachers to help them learn how to embrace and use technology effectively. But the truth is, I knew that my students were all better at it than I was. And so I started a club called Tech Club, and my kids helped teachers all over the building. And what's really cool is so many of them ended up in the tech industry. And they were freshmen, sophomores, juniors. It was cool. And I found Future Teachers of America, and I worked in the soccer program. But the most important club was when I realized how bad the bullying was for sexual minority youth, for LGBTQAI, whatever labels you want to use, the kids who were not fitting into the binary view that so many people held. And it was a very tough fight with my school district because I had scared administrators, but we got Gay Straight Alliances established in all four schools, and then we started a program to support Gay Straight Alliances around the county.
Yeah,
and that's by far the most important thing I did.
Yeah, and you know, like today, in today's world, I mean, we all understand we want our children to have age-appropriate materials. We want kids to be kids, but some of us are beginning to feel like the bullying has gone too far with some of these minority people in school, the students, the LGBTQ community, others. And it has now we see politicians, businesses, so many people are now saying, well, I'm going to put my foot down. But are they really putting their foot down, or are they just bullying a certain segment of society?
I would argue that we are bullying multiple segments depending on the particular biases of the bullies.
Yes.
And we're bullying people over race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation and gender identity. The culture wars that are going on are making trans people feel less safe than ever, which we've made such progress, it breaks my heart. And schools have never handled this very well, but once lawsuits started working, we saw much more cooperation from school districts. But now, in our current society, there's real support for bullying and marginalizing, and it's wrong. And I absolutely support the right of parents to have some input into their kids' education and determine if materials are not appropriate for them. I draw the line if they're telling me that they can decide not only for themselves and their students, but they get to decide for every parent and every student, because they're denying other parents the same rights they actively pursue and are entitled to themselves.
Yeah,
so that's a big issue for me right now. It's so big that I've started writing a novel, because someone pointed out that people who read my blog, which has been going on for almost 7 years, either they don't come back or they agree with me. But if I want to reach more people, I need to try a different venue.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That is a hot button topic right here in the state of Florida as well.
Oh, I know.
And a lot of people are very, very nervous, and it's causing a lot of anxiety amongst parents as well, because we are seeing so many people who are now taking their children out of public school and putting them in private schools, of course, with vouchers that taxpayers are paying for. And we're seeing a lot of people who are now homeschooling, and it's all because the one thing you hear behind closed doors is, I don't want my kids with them. And the thing is, who is the them, right? God made all of us. We're all human beings who want to live on planet Earth, this beautiful, magnificent planet that that God created for all of us. But when people start singling out us versus them, I think that's a huge problem. And our religious leaders, no matter what faith we have, we ought to start talking more about love and inclusion with each other, because at the end of the day, when we get old and we need someone to take care of us, we don't ask the caregiver, what is your faith? What is your religion? What is your identity? We don't ask that. We say, can you take care of me until the good Lord takes me home? And what you want is love and appreciation. So I feel like all of us collectively as human beings, we need to start speaking up for each other and try to promote a little more unity and love in our country. Because
I would love to see that.
Yeah, well, you're starting it by what you did for other people as a teacher, and now you're writing your book. So when you retired from public school, you also continued to work in the Illinois Mathematical and Science Academy. Man, it sounds like you have your time and you're spending it right. Talk to us a little bit about that part of your life, too.
I used to have my students write their epitaph because of a Hawthorne short story we read about a young man who died and nobody knew it. And I had to stop that because obviously that could be a sensitive or dangerous thing. But every year my epitaph was, "She made a difference in the life of kids." And that's why I became a teacher. And I loved teaching. And that's why I stayed with it every which way I could. And now I'm a court-appointed special advocate guardian ad litem for kids in foster care. And I'm seeing firsthand a level of being disadvantaged by being born into a really bad situation the child didn't choose that I didn't see so much among my own students in school. And I'm realizing how badly, as a society, we need to figure out how to lift these kids up. They didn't choose it. This is just the circumstance they were born into. I was so fortunate to be born into a loving, intact family that supported me and helped me achieve my dreams. I'm trying to do that for kids now. And we really need to think about how we come together to support people instead of dividing us.
Yes, and it amazing. You know, I wish every retired person would would give back the way you do, because you are being the change you wish to see. Now, in addition to that, I don't know if I told my friend Ellen yet, my co-host, but you do a lot of kayaking. Your website, and Ellen loves being out in the water too. So transition away from the academic part of it, but you're also doing a lot with the kayaking, and that's also a big part of your life.
It is. We are no longer traveling the world. We have kayaked on 5 continents. But between the pandemic and some health challenges in our age, we've decided only to kayak in the U.S. now. But in September, we're taking our boats to Yellowstone Lake and Jackson Lake, although the water may be too low. We'll see. And I've taught a lot of people to kayak because I love it, and I want other people to understand how easy it is. In fact, this weekend was a milestone birthday for my husband, and yesterday we had a brunch, and a good friend was over. She said, "Okay, I finally tried it. I love it. I want to learn to kayak." And we've already made a date to go out on the water. I just think it's, and I took students kayaking, and my department chair said, "Are you crazy?" I said, "I have a huge liability insurance policy. We'll be fine." And it was wonderful. And it's just being in a boat on the water is where I find my spiritual center and serenity. I love doing it.
It seems as though you're taking your talents, gifts, and abilities and giving it back. You're a born teacher. You really are. You know?
I think that there are a lot of us who knew from a young age we wanted to teach, and it's just part of who we are. I suspect that might be true for your guest in the studio. And I was once out with my husband kayaking, and this family came over and asked about our boats, and I started talking, and the mom said, "Are you a teacher?" And I said, "Yes, does it show?" And she laughed and said, "Yes." I just think it's how I see the world.
Yes. We are a diverse world. We come from all different nations, different cultures, different peoples, and I wish everyone could see it like that, because at the end of the day, when people go home, some people are lucky enough to have a home, and some people are not. Some people are fortunate to have family members to have a meal and talk about their day, and some people don't. And it's like you say, it's also the way we were born and to who we were born to. The circumstances of birth is a whole different show, I think. But you also write in your blogs as well that safe schools does work. So talk a little bit with our listening audience and viewpoint with Sita and friends about those three words, because I do believe that is so true. Safety and security for all is so important.
I think we saw, and when I say we, I didn't do this alone. I enlisted some friends, and there were three of us who made it happen. And it was a really ugly, painful process when we got the Gay Straight Alliances. But once we had that in place, And it was so interesting to me. The closeted kids and the closeted teachers weren't the ones who made it happen because they didn't feel safe. It was allies. It was kids who had a friend or a family member who knew how important it was, who fought for this. And once they were in place, it was beautiful because kids could come to us when things were happening. They could find support. We could help them get the help that they needed. I had a kid who was mercilessly teased by her math teacher, and we guided her through the process of registering a complaint and asking that he change his behavior. And 13 years after we founded what we called PRISM, our Gay Straight Alliance, and I'd been retired for quite a while, they asked me to come back and talk about it. And I had kids come up to me and hug me and say, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for PRISM. It made me safe. So first, it's about kids being safe and okay, because that's the most important thing. But also, kids can't learn if they don't feel safe. And the kids who are coming to school feeling unsafe, we were limiting their possibilities. So I very much believe in the importance of being overtly clear that you are a safe space, that you make a safe space for kids in the school, that you will protect them, that you will help them get the help they need. Because if the point of school is learning, you have to feel safe to be ready to learn.
Yes, and sometimes that's the only place some people have to be safe is at school, because some children, some students are going through such difficult times at home, you know.
And I will tell you that although I find this hard to believe, this is my 18th or 19th year of retirement because I am that old, and I am still in touch with so many of my students, and the young man who galvanized me and made me pursue the GSA and not quit as I had done before just came and visited us from Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, I read that about you, that you have stayed in touch with so many of your students, because you know what? I think the determining factor here why all of them, most of them, stay in touch with you is that you really gave them a lot of love. And,
well, they
and that's
give
what
me
people
a lot
want.
Of love.
Yes, yes. And so in addition to being an author and having your blog and the kayaking stuff you're doing, you also received a lot of awards and honors in Illinois from the teaching establishment there. Talk to our listeners a little bit about some of the things you received, not because you did your teaching for that and hoped for it, but people saw what you were doing and they appreciated it.
Well, I was very fortunate. I ended up at a school that I would never have chosen otherwise, because the school district I had just started at when we moved back to Illinois had a referendum defeat and let go of 16% of the staff, and I had to find a new job. And the school I went to really supported my doing exciting things. So I was a master teacher in the state of Illinois, and I was a featured speaker at the biggest educational conference talking about this problem-based learning class I developed, and I got some writing awards, and I started a study skills center that won a national award. And that was all nice, but that, I mean, I did it because I thought it would make school better for kids. And my father's favorite award I got was I was one of the 10 best soccer announcers in the county for high school sports. And I thought, Dad, I love you, but that's not the most important thing I ever did. Might be the most fun, but it doesn't compare to some of the other work. So I was very lucky that I ended up in a district that really encouraged me and supported me.
Yeah. And you know, some of the things you write about is it's about behavior, right? And I also feel like if we change our behaviors towards each other, what a different world we would have.
And that's something teachers can impact. I started this semester with classes by having them establish a clear set of rules on. For my upperclassmen, I'd always call them Mr. Smith and Ms. Jones, and treat them like young adults that they were. And I think we model that kind of behavior. And when there were under-the-breath comments, when I could still hear them, call it out. You don't just stand by. Say, we don't behave that way in this room. That's not acceptable. And I think that it has never been more important, because the way we are behaving in public is showing kids a very different path, and I don't think it's good.
Right, right. And so if somebody wanted to find your books, where can they find the books? Because I know there are a lot of teachers that would love to see this collaboration that you've put together, not just from yourself and other teachers, but your students as well. And you've put it nicely into your book. Where can they find it, and where can they find your blog?
Well, they can find my book through me or Politics and Prose Bookstore in D.C., but a better place now, if they do Kindle, it's on Amazon and Kindle. I didn't want to publish it through Amazon because I really wanted to be in independent bookstores, but that's a very long story. You don't have time for it today. I really love independent bookstores. It is available on Amazon, on Kindle. It's called Tales Told Out of School. And a paperback version will be available on Amazon in a couple of months. And my blog is blog.imwriter, letter I, letter M as in Mary, writer, WRITER.com, blog.imwriter.com. Imwriter.com is my writing website, and my son built it for me so many decades ago, and I thought it was incredibly clever to call myself I Am Writer without the A.
Your blog is very inspiring, but at the same time, it's all about building up the self-confidence of anyone who reads your blog, whether it's a student, a teacher, an administrator. I thank you for doing that, because in today's age, we have so many people who have mental issues or financial issues or emotional, whatever issues it is. We need to lift each other up instead of put people down. And I think you're doing a really good job of that on your blog.
Well, thank you so much. That is one of my goals.
And the other messages, too, is just by your actions and the clubs and the things that you had instituted at your school, making people realize that you don't always have to fight City Hall. Sometimes you just have to find a way or a way around things to still make an effective effort.
We all have to get
sneakier
about that.
Exactly, exactly.
And figure out what end run will get us to the finish line.
Exactly.
I don't want to be illegal. I don't want to be devious. But when people stand in the way of the right thing, you're right. We find another way.
That's right. And I don't think people have that divergent thinking anymore. Because I think with the politics and everything that comes down, I think people feel a little beaten down. So this is a great message to get out to all of our listening audience all over the world.
Yes.
About being proactive and not settling. When you know something's not right and you have to fix it, especially when it's in the care of young adults that don't have the facilities or maybe not have the ability to be able to do this on their own, that they have adults that they can look up to be able to get that done for them.
Well, but I actually think they lead the way. They just need to be shown the tools and the processes. But they're the bravest people I know.
Right. But and hopefully they'll be the ones
saying
leading
the world has to change.
Well, yeah. So, you know, teachers are our first friends. And I know a teacher changed my life by just taking an interest in my life, by understanding that I came from a home where we had domestic violence, we had bullying, we had issues with resources, we didn't have the right shoes and clothes. And that one teacher that put her arms around me and said, let's talk. How can I help? But, you know, in today's world, teachers are so afraid to even put their arm around a student. And that is where I feel like we've gone wrong. I feel like if there's a teacher that's concerned about a child's welfare, that teacher should be commended. We shouldn't be picking on the teachers. We shouldn't be finding faults with them. We should actually be helping them, parents and teachers and administrators, working together, because an educated nation benefits all of us.
Absolutely. And I would suggest that it's really important for the community to support teachers instead of attacking them, because we don't have enough teachers even to put bodies in classrooms, much less say we want good teachers. We don't have enough bodies for classrooms anymore, and the pipeline isn't good enough anymore. And I really believe every good teacher I've ever known, and I've known many, didn't choose the career for the money or the summers off. I usually did curriculum work for the district in the summer. We did it because of the love of kids. And we're going to see people not going into the field, and at a time when kids' mental health is more precarious than it's ever been. The studies on current suicidal ideation and attempts are very frightening. We really need to support schools and teachers instead of trying to micromanage them. I have the equivalent of a PhD in education graduate work. Trust me, my heart's in the right place. I'll work with you. But don't attack what I'm trying to do to help your kid or help someone else's kid.
I never thought I would live to see the day when the teaching profession is scrutinized so much and under attack. And that's how I feel when you open Facebook, you open any social media feed, or you open a newspaper, and you're watching what our school system, especially here in Florida now, they're saying, who can teach in a classroom? You don't even have to have a college degree. And I think that is really a problem when you think about who is going to be teaching the kids and what are they going to be teaching the kids and what is their end goal, what is the agenda. And I think that bothers a lot of us because we're not sure what's happening anymore.
I am sure, but I don't like what's happening. And I will tell you, my husband's a physicist. He taught at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was a professor at Yale. And after he retired, he decided to teach high school and teach kids to love physics. This was pre-pandemic. And he did a semester and said, oh my God, I can't do this. To be a teacher isn't just to know your content, because my husband's a brilliant man who knows his content. It's learning how to relate to kids, how to help kids behave the way they need to, and things like that. And it takes training, and it takes your heart being there. And we want people who do that. So we want to support them so they want to do that, because everybody wins if schools are effective. Society wins. Young people grow up to be self-sufficient, healthy adults. We have people who can fill the jobs that need to be filled because they have the skills. Everybody wins if we work together to support our schools.
Right, and we're going to end the segment with something that you wrote on your website. And I've repeated this so many times myself. It says, I am no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I am changing the things I cannot accept. And that is a quote by Angela Davis.
Yes, I love that quote.
I know.
The other one I'll leave you with, because this is something your listeners might really appreciate, is Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
That's my favorite saying, and it's at the top floor of the Chicago Library on a wall
as
you're walking in, and I've taken 100 pictures of it.
And that's where Ellen Young is calling in from, Chicago. What part of Illinois are you calling in from?
We live 40 miles west of Chicago.
Which subdivision is that? What area is that?
We're in Geneva. It's a tiny little town in the Fox Valley, and the Fox River runs through it. And if we could get enough rain, we'd be on the river.
Well, now, I lived in Oaklawn for about two or three years.
Oh, well, so we're north and west of that.
Gotcha. And the second guest is today's calling in from Darien, Illinois.
Yep.
Today's our Illinois Day.
Not that far from us either. I went there to buy a TV and long, long time ago. And our first kayaking trip was 10,000 Islands, Florida.
Oh, very cool. So next time you come down, you'll have to make sure. I know you're not traveling too much, but next time you come down, we'll hook you up with a kayak trip for sure. Thank you so much, Ellen, for calling in and sharing your wisdom with us. And great messages, too, by the way. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and then we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9 Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473. 2473 for Cloud 9.
Welcome Mattress to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroadsFinancialGroup.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. Ellen, people can listen to us all the way in Indonesia.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web on 1510 WWBC. You'll see on that page you can hit the Listen Live button, which is the biggest button on the left-hand side. And then below that says On Demand. You can pick by date and hear any of our archive shows by date. Certainly on our website, it's a little bit easier because you can search by name or subject, and you'll be able to find those on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right.
And what a great first segment with another Ellen.
Ellen Young. It's just amazing. When people start speaking about public education, about an education for all students, your heart and your mind just kicks right in because it's what we do. We all have a teacher to change our minds.
But so many teachers have such a battle.
That took an interest in our life, you know?
That's right. And they have, but so, teachers now have such a battle, battling administrations and battling rules that, you know, don't seem like the right thing to do for students. And it's nice to hear that Ellen, I don't know if she goes by Ellen or Ellen Joe, but that it's nice to hear that Ellen is coming up with new ways or creative ways to try and help combat that for people that maybe have, again, get beaten down a little bit.
Even though she's retired, I think the one thing I took away from that segment is even though she's retired, and you gasp when she said how many years, right? That she sounds so energetic and so young. That's, her voice is such a young voice, yes.
And so no pun intended, that was her last name.
Yeah. So that's right. So our second segment is with Matt McCain. He's a long-term care insurance specialist. He's recognized as one of the nation's leading long-term care specialists. And he is supposed to be calling us from Illinois. I did give him all the information. If he doesn't, that's okay. We'll just keep talking.
That's right, because we're good at this.
Because we're good at what we do, and we know what he's calling to talk about.
So let's start out with me asking you, Sita. You've been a long-term care nurse for over 25, 30 years?
That's right.
Right? So what are some of the things, just until Matt calls in, what are some of the things that you've seen, even in the last couple of years, about long-term care nursing facilities or just the simple piece about the insurance? Because I know with some of my friends, they get surprised. They wind up having a surgery or they wind up having some type of health issue that goes on, and then they realize that long-term care is not what they thought it was going to be on their insurance. Now, I know you're not an expert at it necessarily
because you're on the nurse side.
I'm not, but what do you see?
I think these are issues that people should talk about before they get older. They should sit down with their financial advisor or their spouses or their children and talk about the cost of growing old in America, because no matter what kind of insurance you have, at some point, if you require long-term care, it's going to cost money, either Medicaid or you'll be writing a check or your insurance, or if you are lucky enough to have long-term care, you pay from that. So that's what Matt was calling to talk about, because the financial cost, the burdens of aging, impacts everyone.
It does impact everybody, and in such a way so that even the insurance information that's out there is very convoluted. It's hard to understand. It's hard to read. That's why you need a professional in your corner. And we've had plenty on our show. One Insurance. We've had plenty of folks on our show that have sponsored shows to talk about this kind of guideline through it. And I think you've told me before too, that, you know, you don't start thinking about this that it's when you're 70 or 80. There are more people that are experiencing long-term care at 50 and 45 because of medical issues that are happening possibly earlier than they normally would have.
Right, and you have to protect your assets. You have to protect your income, right? You have to protect what you have, your retirement. A lot of people don't understand that there are folks in our country that didn't save, or by the grace of God, they couldn't save. They have a home, a car, a job, maybe a pension. And when you get ill, if you cannot return to your home and you need care, those folks may qualify for Medicaid. And there are others that, because they had a bank account, they worked hard, some of them went without, and they scrimped and they saved, they would have to write a check for that bed. And you'll have someone who's on Medicaid in the same bed and someone writing a check for $9,000 to $10,000 in the exact same room. So I think what happens is it gets to be a very tricky situation, because it all depends on how much you earned, how much you own, and who is taking care of you. Now, a lot of people have the long-term care insurance where you can have someone come into your home and take care of you, and maybe you could jump in there because your mom was in a nursing home as well, right? Come closer to the mic. Yeah. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your experience when your mom went into the nursing home, because I know it was a few of you, your other siblings, that were involved. Did your father pass away before your mom, or did who passed away first?
By the time she went into the long-term care, one of her lovely caregivers, it was costing $9,000 to $10,000 a month, which not everybody has, but that had to be spent down. She qualified for Medicaid within a few days of her death. But we got the notice.
Right, but I think you guys had paid quite a few years
into
that.
Oh, we did.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So that's what I mean. And I think there are some attorneys that you could sit down with and go through financial planning, and you're able to maybe have a live-in trust, but you guys didn't do that.
Well, there was an attorney involved going back maybe 5 years, but there's a seven-year look back. So we had some challenges there. basically, it just comes down to if you have the money, you have to spend it.
That's right. And that's why I think sometimes we write on Facebook, on social media, whatever, life is a vacation, enjoy it. How many times, Ellen, we've had people on our show that says, my mom is in a nursing facility or my dad is in a nursing facility, and my mom always wanted to go on a cruise. She wanted to go to Alaska. My dad always said no. Or my mom wanted a picket fence and my dad said no. And it's like, if you have the money, if you worked hard for it and you're still able-bodied and you're able to enjoy life, get what you want.
That's right.
Because at some point, long-term care planning is going to become a critical part of your life. You're going to have to sit down with somebody and plan. Some people depend, they'll say, well, my daughter will take care of me. My daughter-in-law will take care of me. But honestly, if you get to that point in life where someone cannot lift you, they cannot turn you, they cannot transfer you from bed to chair, you're probably looking at going into a facility, correct?
Yes.
And that's what happens with a lot of people. Their families keep them home as long as possible with help. And a lot of people will write that into their will or whatever, you know, they have for their instructions. But it's not doable sometimes.
But that's in Brevard County, I can speak for here because I'm just aware of so many of the assisted living facilities and of all different types. They have, we've had guests on our show like Buena Vida, who's paid for a show before, and they consider themselves the only independent living community in Brevard, where they have three different stages. They have complete independent living, which is cottages across the street, and then they've got independent living where you sort of live in an apartment but somebody's still checking on you, and then you've got care, you know, a care, two levels or three levels of care in that same facility. And I've encouraged people before that we've had these conversations when they go or they're speaking to me and asking me about a will or who should they go to get their estate planning or any of those types of things. I say this is the time too as well to go investigate all of the community opportunities that you have. Like I said, there's several communities. Or you get with a company like Harmony, I believe it is. They actually help you find a facility.
Yeah, they're like navigators.
And they're navigators, right. And there are still navigators that are out there, correct, Sita, that you see as part of your facility?
We do, but you know, like people don't understand. We are living longer. We're all living longer. And the consequences of aging has a massive impact on families. It has a massive impact on families and your finances, the two Fs. And many families, when they have to put a loved one into a long-term care facility, it is heartbreaking because you're taking away that person's ability to drive a car, to unlock their front door, to prepare their own meals, to enjoy their furnishings and their surroundings in their own home. And some people, they can't handle it. So these are things that you have to plan ahead. And you have to say, well, when mom gets to be this age or dad gets to be this age, who is going to be the person in charge? Now, there are a lot of families that have multiple siblings and one person has to be in charge. You can't have everybody calling a facility or calling mom and dad on a daily basis and saying, do this and do that. These things, I think sometimes Thanksgiving and Christmas is a good time to bring up these topics, don't you think?
Right. And certainly just make sure that it's all planned, that you are spending the time at least at some point. You should sit down with your entire family and let everyone know, whoever would be taking care of your, managing your affairs, let them know what your wishes are.
And you speak from experience too, but you know, like family caregiving, the caregivers, they give a lot. It takes a lot out of a person to take care of someone else. And we see in of course, I've been a long-term care nurse for over 33 years. I have seen caregiver fatigue. I have seen people literally need a break because it's just too much. But of course, you know, people can say, well, the parents took care of the children and it wasn't too much. But when you're able to walk and talk and take care of yourself, it's different. But when you get older and you can't, that becomes a problem. And we're seeing a lot more people with dementia. And you know what happens with dementia? Personality changes, right? And you could speak about that. You've seen that firsthand.
Yes. That person is no longer who you know, and it's heartbreaking. I have a mother-in-law who is in end-of-life stage and her three children are taking care of her in their home, and they just had hospice come in, but hospice is not there 24 hours. So I'm hearing from them now how rough the night is because of the dementia.
Yeah, and the sundowners. Yes, yes.
And I did see a little bit of that with my mom. So I do share some things. And what I have stressed the last few months mostly to them is to get respite care for themselves, the caregiver.
Yes.
It's just like you had mentioned. It just kill you.
Yes. We had a physician call in from Illinois once, and she had spoken about the book she wrote. I think it was Woodson. Dr. Woodson. She had called in to talk about that, and she said that the caregivers really and truly, they need to take care of themselves first before they can take care of someone else. And there's a lot of resources available in Brevard, actually. Even hospices have people that you could talk to them and get assistance. But I tell you, one of the things I learned early on as a nurse is having the long-term care insurance. I got it through the CNA, which is, I think, Continental Insurance Company, and I don't think they do that anymore. A lot of us were grandfathered into that, but the premiums go up. Like when you're in your 20s, we were paying like maybe $190 every, you're smiling, we were paying like $190 or something every quarter. And then as in your 30s, it went up to like $200, and then in your 30s, in your 40s, it's up. So I think now I'm paying like $460 every 3 months. But when you think about what you get for that, it's well worth it, right? And a lot of people who had it, I had friends who said, oh, the premiums kept going up and I dropped it. But I don't think that's a wise decision, because you, with that kind of insurance, they can take care of you at home or in a facility, you know. And but Ellen, you've seen that yourself with loved ones. We have a friend who's now in a long-term care facility, and we've had other people. How did that impact you when you had to take care of someone that needed you?
Well, I saw it both with both of my parents as well as with friends, and it's difficult because especially someone that's primarily alone, you know, doesn't live with anyone, yes. And all of a sudden it's like this emergency of what happens to my pet and what happens to my and what happens if I have to be taken by ambulance. Then what happens to my home and lock, you know, all of those things. So once again, it's almost like, because I've seen it so much, it's almost like a hurricane kit for me.
Yes.
Like I prepare ahead of time, and everyone knows what their job is. If this happens, this is going to trigger a series of events for me, because I do live, I mean, I don't live alone necessarily, but I don't live with a family member.
Yes.
So, you know, I want to make sure that person isn't burdened with a bunch of things that they would have to take care of for me as well.
Right.
So that way the family all has to know. But it goes back to what you were saying about insurance too. And I just want to add in the resources for Brevard County specifically. Again, you know, I'm sure it's available in every area, but Aging Matters, United Way, all of those are great
Senior Place. We have one gentleman senior place, from One
exactly.
Senior Place.
Very, very good opportunity for you to go while you're loose, while everything is good, to go and talk about what your plan would be.
Yeah, because the cost of growing old is skyrocketing.
And keep in mind, it might not be dementia. I could, you know, God forbid, any one of us could get hit, be in a car accident.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know,
yes,
and
yes.
We would have to.
That's why don't text and drive, folks.
That's right, another little public service announcement. But, you know, you never know when that time could come. We don't have a date stamp on it. So we need to make
sure
that
all of
those
things.
Talk
about life being a vacation is, well, you know what it is too. Like as you get older and educated, right? You educate yourself about what to eat. You educate yourself about, you know, how to drive, how to be careful, whatever. People do yoga, they meditate. We are living longer because we have learned the art of taking care of our bodies, our mind, and our spirit. How many of our friends wake up early and walk on the beach? How many of our friends now have a gym membership? How many people eat right? A lot of people have cut out red meat. A lot of people are cutting out fats, you know, from their diet. So you will live longer. But the trick is, people who live longer have to prepare, because the cost of living longer is skyrocketing, right?
So and we're seeing that now with the cost of food and the cost of other insurances if you're lucky to still be driving. I know my car insurance went up $200, and that was, everybody was like, well, stop complaining if it only went up $200.
We're insurance to death. Look what's happening with the homeowner's insurance.
Homeowner's insurance is
that's
the same thing.
Danny's shaking his and head that, because that's that affecting him, of course.
And again, that doesn't change. If you carry a mortgage or you don't carry a mortgage, an additional $1,000 a year is a significant jump without being prepared for it. And certainly you're not prepared for it when you're getting 2 months' notice
right.
or a month's notice.
Right.
To be able to go and shop other things. So, you know, big message today, since we're talking about Medicare and Medicaid and all of those things, is make sure if you do not have an insurance professional or a financial advisor now, Jock Coffin Associates is a fantastic. They are sponsors of our show. You want to go make an appointment with Alan or Pat and find out who they use for navigators and find out who can help as that supplemental piece of making sure that, you know, when do you take Social Security?
Well,
do you need this insurance or that insurance?
And the other thing, too, if you go on the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare website, every single question you have can be answered right there about Medicaid and Medicare. But I think what a lot of people
if you
don't
can read and if you can see...
Yeah.
You know, because there's, you know, there's challenges with that.
But you have, most people have relatives and stuff. But I think the most important thing to take away from this particular segment, since something must have happened to Mr. McCain, it's fine, we'll figure it out again, is if you are in doubt about growing older and bolder and wiser and you want information, all you have to do is go on Brevard County website and look up One Senior Source, look up Aging Matters, whatever. And there are people there who donate their time and energy for free, and they know this stuff. They are well-versed in growing older. And I think long-term care insurance is important if you could afford it. But, I mean, look, at people have to think about their mortgage, car payment, life insurance, health insurance, food on the table, sending kids to school. They probably don't have that kind of money to buy insurance. But if you do, find someone who knows, who can navigate that process for you.
And get the facts
and sit down with your children and figure out when you get older what's going to happen. And at the same time, look around at facilities in your area and see which one you would choose as, you know, as when the time comes. Me personally, I would prefer to age in place, and I want to be in my home with assistance and somebody overseeing and being an advocate for me. I prefer to be comfortable in my home. And I want to die at home.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't make that kind of... Danny, too. Look at... He wants to be in his boat.
That's right. He's going to have a Viking
burial. You know,
burial.
What I learned on our show is Ellen and I could pretty much carry a conversation or just about any topic that people throw away because we're experienced here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And thank you. 14 years, we're actual experts, but we're not professionals in that particular field. Someone
right.
can go and... use Mr. Google and figure that one out.
And going back to your point, United Way helps 45 charities, and a lot of them have to do with aging. So you want to make sure that
look
get
where
with
we live,
United, get,
Florida.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Get with United Way if you have any resource questions. And once again, Sita, another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We will see you each and every Monday right here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. God bless. We'll see you next week.